I used to be a nice, sweet, good person, and now I hate him. I hate him so much, Josh. I really do.
Eden.
He turns me toward him, smoothing my hair back from my face.
Look at me. Breathe, okay?
He says with his hands on my shoulders. I hate him so much sometimes that... Gasp, gasp, gasp. Sometimes I can't feel anything else at all. Just hate. Gasp. Hate. That's all. That's everything. My whole life is just hate. And I can't get it out of me. No matter what I do, it's always there. I can't.
Who is it? Just say the name, please, Eden. Just tell me.
He's gripping my arms so tight he's actually hurting me, and all of this pressure builds inside my chest, inside my head.
What's his
Kevin Armstrong! I scream it. Finally. It was Kevin! It was Kevin! His hands ease up.
Armstrong?
He lets go of me. His brain is working something out. I can't tell what.
Armstrong.
He says again. I don't know if the disdain in his voice is because he thinks I'm lying or because he believes me. I open my mouth to ask, but he brings his fist down against the steering wheel. Hard. He mutters something indecipherable and then...
Fucking son of a bitch. That fucking...
He shakes his head back and forth, and he wraps both his hands around the steering wheel so tight I think he might rip the thing off. You believe me, don't you? I ask, desperately needing someone on my side. He jerks his head up and says,
I'm going to fucking kill him, Eden. I swear to God, I'm gonna kill him.
You believe me, right? I ask again.
Eden, of course I believe you. I just...
He inhales and exhales slowly, trying to calm himself.
You could have told me. You should have told me. Back when we were together. Why? Why didn't you ever say anything? I would have believed you then, too.
God, I almost wish he didn't just tell me that. I wish he'd said that he wouldn't have believed me, because then I could feel justified in not telling him. I just look down at my hands, shake my head.
There were so many things that never made sense. About you, about what happened between us. God, it seems so obvious. I should have known. Eden, I was with that guy like every day. I mean, we were on the same team. Kevin Armstrong, I...
He reaches out and takes my hand. I lean my head against the headrest and close my eyes. Breathe. Just breathe. I'm so exhausted, I whisper.
Do you want me to take you home?
I can't be there right now, I tell him, my voice so quiet.
School?
I open my eyes. You're kidding, right? He smiles an equally exhausted smile at me.
I think we both probably need a little rest. We could go to my house. My parents are already at work. Just to sleep, I promise.
He adds.
Then we'll figure out what to do. Okay?
I see they painted your room, I say, standing in the middle of my own personalized twilight zone. I sit down on the edge of his bed and unlace my boots.
Oh, yeah. I forgot they did that. So you can have the bed. I'll just go crash on the couch or something,
he says, fidgeting in the doorway. Oh, I shouldn't be disappointed. I shouldn't be surprised. Yeah, sure. But I am.
Is that not... I mean, well, is that okay?
I don't know. I was kind of thinking you might stay with me, but if you're not comfortable, I mean, I could take the couch too, if you want.
No, I'll stay,
he says, entering his room cautiously. Awkwardly, we lie down next to each other, neither of us wanting to point out the obvious clumsiness of the situation. Side by side, we stare at the ceiling. The lightning bolt crack is still there. Exactly as I remembered it. I turn my head to look at him, and my body moves on its own, its muscles having long ago memorized this routine. He tenses when I place my hand on his chest. Sorry, can I? I ask, realizing that while in my mind we are still intact, In reality, I no longer have permission to do this, to touch him, at all.
Yeah,
he whispers. I watch his throat move as he swallows hard. He's nervous. He's probably worried I'm going to try something. I'm a little worried about that, too. I lay my head in its old spot, and I fall asleep easy. So easy, somehow. I'm facing the other way when I wake up. Joshua Miller, is spooning me. I press my face into the pillow and breathe it in. It smells so clean, like him, like his sheets and clothes and skin always smelled. With his body molded to mine like this, I get the feeling that his arms are the only thing holding these broken pieces of me together, and I don't ever want him to let go. I feel him press his face into my hair and kiss. I close my eyes, want to freeze this moment, want to stay just like this, and never have to do or think or feel or be anything else at all. His hands seem to move purposefully. I shouldn't turn my head, shouldn't twist my body around to face him, but I do. And his mouth finds my mouth. The warmth of his body is something I could never remember properly. That is something that has to be felt in the present.
I miss you,
he whispers, his lips moving against mine. I miss you too, I echo.
Eden, it could work this time,
he says softly, inching his face away so we can look at each other, brushing my hair behind my ear.
I know it could. We could make it work.
I start to nod, start to smile, but this time, he said. I don't want it to be this time, though. I just want it to be then. I just want to go back. I want to start over and not become who I became. This time. Those two words like a 1-2 punch in the gut. Your girlfriend, I remind him, and myself.
I know.
He whispers, closing his eyes like it hurts to even think about having to hurt her.
But I love you.
I still love you, he whispers, coming in to kiss me again. I feel my hands push against him. I can't. You can't either. You'd hate yourself for it, and I don't want to be the reason you hate yourself. I don't want to hurt anyone. I can't just keep hurting people.
I know, but...
He holds on tighter. I feel like I might fall apart if he lets go, if I make him let go.
All I ever wanted was for you to let me know you, and now you are...
His hands, his arms, can hold the pieces in place temporarily. Maybe even for a long time, but he can never truly put them back together. That's not his job. He's not the hero, and he's not the enemy, and he's not a god. He's just a boy. And I'm just a girl who needs to pick up her own pieces and put them back together herself. I sit up, out of his arms. I'm still here. I didn't crumble to dust. I let my back rest against the headboard. I stare at my hands. These steady, capable things. Capable of things. I try to figure out why everything suddenly feels different. Lighter. Why I feel like, for once in my life, I might really have some control over what happens next. That things will happen next, instead of this perpetual nightmarish loop my life seems to be cycling. He sits up too and moves next to me, waiting for me to say something, waiting for me to explain what the hell is going on. I look at him, and it's like the first time I'm really seeing him. He looks puzzled.
What is it?
I always thought that somehow you'd be the one to save me, you know? All along, all those years ago even. I think that's why I called. Maybe I wanted this to happen. I wanted you to come and, you know, rescue me or whatever.
So let me,
he says, like it's easy, like it's possible. You can't, though. Nobody can.
That's not true, Eden.
He reaches for my hand, and strangely, that too feels like the first time he's ever touched me. It feels new, tingly, electric almost. It's like the first time anyone has ever touched me, which, in a way, is true. I've never really been this person before. No, I just mean, I can't keep thinking of myself as someone who needs rescuing. He opens his mouth, but pauses.
Okay, I get that. I do, but just let me... I don't know, let me help you.
You are.
I can do more, though. I'll be with you, really with you, if you'd just let me. We have something, Eden. We do. You can't deny that.
Remember that day when you came over to talk to me? I ask him. He looks at me blankly. Remember, I was sitting in the grass by the tennis courts, and you had just gotten out of practice, and you were waiting for your mom to come pick you up?
I...
He stares hard at his ceiling, trying to recall this moment that was so fresh in my mind.
I guess,
he finishes uncertainly. You were telling me about dandelions? He thinks for a second.
Right, yeah.
Before you left, you gave me the in-between one. That's what you called it, remember?
Oh, God, yeah,
he says with a laugh.
That was pretty stupid, huh?
No, it wasn't. I kept it. I still have it. And now he looks at me like maybe it's the first time he's really seen me, too. I thought it was really sweet, I continue. But of course I couldn't bring myself to tell you that. I loved it. My mouth shuts out of habit, not used to sweet words exiting, but I make it open again for the important part. I mean, I loved you. He nods, only once.
Past tense,
he says matter-of-factly, not looking at me. We sit in silence like strangers.
Eden, this isn't gonna happen, is it? Us, I mean.
I wanted it to. I really did, but... I shake my head gently. I think you're right, though. We do have something. I'm just not sure what. There's a brief moment of silence for what we've lost, and in that moment, it ends. Finally, the past of us officially comes to an end.
Eden, I think I'll always have feelings for you. You know that, right? I don't know that they'll ever go away, but...
He stops.
But I'll be your friend. I mean, I want to be your friend. Do you think that would be okay?
Yeah, that would be okay, I say with a laugh. That would be very, very okay. That would be perfect. I think I want that more than anything in the entire world.
Okay. Friends.
He grins and knocks his shoulder into mine. Friends. I smile. I have a friend. He smiles back, but only briefly.
Eden, I know you don't want to hear this, but as your friend, as someone who cares about you, I really think you need to tell someone about this. I mean someone besides me. Someone who can do something. Like the police.
And suddenly, the reality of it all comes crashing down like a storm inside of me. It feels like someone's taking my internal organs and twisting them into demented balloon animals. I guess it shows on my face because he says,
I know it'll be hard, but it's important.
He gives my hand a squeeze and says the one thing I really need to hear.
They'll believe you. Don't worry.
There are probably a million things I should say to him. I'm sure there are some things he wants to say to me, too. But we just sit, side by side on his bed, in silence. We sit like this for a long time, just being together, not really needing to give voice to all those unsaid words, just knowing and accepting the truth of what we really mean to each other. There's not enough language, anyway, for these things. He kisses my cheek on his front porch. Even his cat comes outside to see me off. He offers to drive me to the police station, then he offers to drive me home, then he offers to walk me home, but I need to walk myself. And I have one other person to talk to before I can go to the police. I take one step off the porch and turn around. He stands there with his hands in his pockets. Josh, are you okay? I mean, how is everything? This should have been my first question, not my last. He smiles.
Yeah, I'm good, basically.
Good. I'm glad. School's good? He nods.
School's good, yeah.
And how's your dad? You know, with his problem? He forces a smile, looks off somewhere above my head, trying to find the words.
He's... you know, it's just...
He meets my eyes, and I understand.
It is what it is, right?
I nod. Stand there for a second. Take a breath as I try to memorize him. And then finally, I turn away.
Hey.
He calls after me as I'm halfway down his driveway. I stop and turn.
You're gonna call me, aren't you?
Yes. I've never answered any questions so honestly in my life.
And you're gonna speak this time, right?
He grins. I smile. Yes. He nods, takes his hand out of his pocket, and waves goodbye.
Why aren't you at school?
Kaylin mumbles at me, still lying on the couch where I left him hours earlier. Not asleep, just staring off into space. He can't force his eyes away from the nothing to even look at me. Kay, I need to talk to you.
Edie, please. I can't right now, okay?
I actually feel bad for him. I feel bad for the things he found out about his best friend, for the things I'm about to tell him. Feel bad that things are going to get so much worse. Can I get you anything? I ask. He shakes his head and closes his eyes. I go into the kitchen and pour him a glass of the good cold water from the fridge. Here. I sit down on the floor next to the couch with the glass. He sits up slowly and takes a sip of the water.
Thanks.
It's important. I find the courage to say, feeling for the first time like maybe this actually is important. Like it matters. Like I matter. It takes him a few extra seconds to hear me. He sets the glass down on the coffee table.
All right,
he says finally, rubbing his eyes, looking totally disinterested. Kaylin, I have to tell you something, and it's important that you listen and that you don't interrupt me.
Okay, okay, I'm listening.
I take a breath. I can do this. All right. This is hard. Really hard. I'm not even sure where to start.
At the beginning?
He offers sarcastically, not knowing he's being helpful in spite of himself. Okay, I'll start at the beginning. There was this night. I start. I stop. I start again. I was a freshman, and I never told anyone about it. But this night... okay, there was this night that... everyone was asleep, and... Kevin came into my room.
For the love of God, Edie, can you just pick one sentence and finish?
Please. I hold my hand up. It silences him for once. He came into my room in the middle of the night, and... I can't look at him when I say it. I close my eyes and cover them with my hands because it's the only way I'll be able to get it out. And he got in my bed. I take a breath. He raped me. He did. Okay, Kaylin? And I never told anyone because he said he would kill me if I did. And I believed him. So I know that what they're saying is true because he did it to me too. And I'm sorry because I know you don't want to hear this, but if you don't believe me, Kay... I gasp to catch my breath. Then you're not my brother anymore. I breathe. And wait. And breathe. And wait. Silence. I slowly uncover my eyes. I expect him to be looking at me, but he's not. His hands are covering his ears, his eyes shut tight. He slumped forward, toward me, his body folded in on itself. He doesn't move. I don't even hear him breathe. I don't know what to say next, so I say nothing. I leave him be. Let him process. Hope that he believes me. That he picks my side. I wait.
I...
He begins, but stops. I look up at him.
I just don't understand what you're saying, Edie.
He mumbles into his hands. Then he pulls himself up and looks at me.
I don't understand how this happened.
He says each word, each syllable separately, precisely, carefully. He studies my face, searching, but I don't understand either. Then he's on his feet fast, and he's pacing like he's thinking too many things all at once.
No,
I hear him mutter as he walks out of sight around the corner and into his bedroom. I almost call after him, but just as I open my mouth, I hear what sounds like a dump truck driving into the side of the house, and Kaylin screaming, "Book!" over and over in this guttural, animal way. My feet can't resist taking me to his door. I look at what he's done, what he's doing. Everything that was sitting on top of his dresser, all the relics of his high school glory, basketball trophies, medals, certificates, photos, and these model cars that he and Kevin spent eternities working on together, is now just a broken, mangled pile of memory vomit on the floor. And he's kicking his closet door over and over with his bare feet. He always keeps such a tight lid on everything. I mean, I've seen him mad, of course. I've seen him nasty at times, but never like this. He spins around, now at his dresser again, and his hands grip the edges so tight. I put my hand over my mouth to keep from yelling at him to stop, because I know what he's about to do. He's about to throw the dresser on the floor. This dresser has to weigh more than both of us combined. It's old, antique old. It belonged to our great-grandparents. It's probably worth something, too. I have a vision of it breaking through the floor and crashing into the basement, but I just stand there, bracing myself, and I watch as it teeters forward, the floorboards creaking under its shifting weight. And then it all stops. The dresser rests again on 4 feet, and he's stopped yelling. He just stands there, breathing heavy, square in front of me, and he looks at me like he sees me, like maybe he finally gets it. He pinches the bridge of his nose as his eyes fill with water, and then he shoves his knuckles into each eyeball, trying to thwart the tears.
I don't understand,
he says again, except this time it's not measured, but messy and trembling, because he does understand. I watch as his body melts down to the floor, and I start to understand something, too, that this isn't all about me. This thing, it touches everyone. My hands are shaking as I hold her business card. As the phone rings, I just read her name over and over and over. Kaylin drives me downtown to the precinct. I bite my nails until they bleed. Kaylin keeps taking these enormous breaths that he doesn't seem to be exhaling, but neither of us speaks until we're walking up the massive, terrifying steps of the building. Kaylin, you don't have to come in with me, I tell him, wanting to spare him. I don't think I could bear for him to hear the details.
No, I'm not leaving you here by yourself, Edie.
We have to empty our pockets and walk through a metal detector. Police officers in bulletproof vests wave those wands over our arms and legs, and then we follow the signs that lead us on a winding path to the 4th floor. I slowly push through the double doors and search the large room full of desks and computers and chairs and phones ringing and people rushing around with clipboards and serious looks on their faces, scanning for Detective Dorian Dodgson.
Eden, I'm so glad you could make it down here so quickly,
she says, appearing next to us.
Kaylin, good to see you again. Shall we find a quieter place to talk?
Detective, I start.
Dorian, please,
she corrects. Okay, Dorian. Kaylin doesn't need to stay, does he?
Not at all. Edie, I'll stay,
Kaylin insists.
Sometimes,
Dorian tells him, picking up on my fear.
With this kind of discussion, the fewer people present, the better. You understand?
She says. He nods, and I think he's partly relieved, too.
I understand,
he says to her.
Call me when you're done, Edie, and I'll come pick you up. I'm going to go to that bar right up the street, the one with the white and green awning, so I'm not far.
He holds out a hand to shake with Dorian's and nods, very gentlemanly.
Thank you for bringing her in, Kaylin, she tells him. You take care now.
She leads me to a room that has a window and a plant and a couch and a coffee table, not at all like those interrogation rooms you see on TV.
It may be difficult to remember some things,
she cautions as she sets a Diet Coke down on the table in front of me.
But just try, as best you can,
to describe exactly what happened. I wish it was difficult to remember. He came into my room. It was 2:48. I looked at the clock. By 2:53, it was over, I tell her, but that's not the complete truth. 5 minutes. 300 seconds. That's all it is. It can seem like a short amount of time or a long amount of time, depending on what's happening. You press the snooze button and wake up 5 minutes later. That's no time at all. But if you're giving a speech at the front of the classroom with all those eyes on you, or you're getting a cavity filled, then 5 minutes can feel like a long time. Or say you're being humiliated and tortured by someone you trusted, someone you grew up with, someone you loved even. 5 minutes is forever. 5 minutes is the rest of your entire fucking stupid life. But there's no way to really explain his mouth almost touching mine. No way to describe how completely alone I felt, like there was no one in the entire world who would be able to help me or stop him, ever. No way to say how much I truly believed him when he said he would kill me. I take a breath and look Dorian in the eye and try to find words to explain what words could never explain. I tell her, as best I can, every gruesome detail. She says things like,
In what way was he restraining your arms? Can you show me? And he penetrated you?
God, that word, penetrate. How could she say it?
How much force? Would you say excessive? Was this before or after? Could you yell for help at that point? Can you describe again exactly how he inserted the nightgown into your mouth? Did you lose consciousness at any point? Did you, at any point, fear for your life? And he told you that he would kill you if you told anyone what happened?
It takes hours. I have to say everything a million times by the end. And then she hands me my own clipboard and pad of paper and a pen, and I have to write it all down while she sits there watching. My hand cramps up after the first couple of pages. I stop and shake it out, extending my fingers. I guess it's pretty awful that I never told anyone, I ask her.
How do you mean?
Well, what if I would have told, and then he wouldn't have... I mean, maybe I could have stopped all this from happening.
When someone threatens your life, those aren't empty words, she states matter-of-factly.
But what if...
No. No more what-ifs, she tells me firmly. You did the right thing by coming in, Eden.
How can you be sure what's right? I ask her, thinking about how everything has to change now. She smiles soberly and says,
It's my job to know the difference between right and wrong. This is right.
I try to smile back.
We're going to get this little bastard, she says. I'm sure of it, and he won't be able to hurt anyone else, okay?
Do you know about what happened to him? I clear my throat. When he was a kid, with his uncle, I mean?
Yes,
she answers. Her face doesn't change, though. She just continues looking at me, unflinching.
That was a terrible thing, yes. But it's not a free pass. Not an excuse.
My heart floods, so full of every emotion I've ever known, all at once. Because she's right. It's no excuse. Not a free pass. Not for him, and not for me. I nod my head.
I won't lie, Eden, she tells me. It'll get harder before it gets easier. But everything will be okay. I promise.
Everything will be okay always sounds like a generic, useless thing that people just say when there's nothing else to be said for a situation. But those words coming out of her mouth, it sounds like the most profound thing anyone has ever said in the history of humankind. Outside, it's dusk, nearly night already. I can just make out the white and green awning. I start to descend the stairs, but I sit down on one of the steps instead. I breathe the cold air in deeply, and it fills my lungs in a new way. I take my phone out and I dial a number I had memorized years ago. It rings.
Hello?
Mrs. Armstrong answers, sounding just exhausted. Hi, Mrs. Armstrong. It's Edie. Is Amanda there?
Honey, I'm not sure she feels like talking right now. Wait, hold on a second.
and I hear her hand cover the receiver, her words muffled. Something's happening, static and movement. It seems like a long time passes. Then finally,
"Hi," Amanda says quietly. "Sorry, I had to go in my room."
And suddenly she sounds like herself again, the girl I used to know. "Hi," I respond, but I don't know what else to say to her.
"I had to tell,"
she says, not wasting any time with chit-chat.
"I just had to."
"Amanda, I'm sorry."
"I'm sorry, too.
About everything. I'm sorry for things you don't even know I should be sorry for, Edie," she admits. "How did you know?" I ask her.
"I could just tell. The other day at school, I could just feel it. I don't know."
"Did he really tell you we actually slept together, like you said?" She pauses and says,
"You know, I always looked up to you so much when we were younger. I don't know if you ever knew that. He knew that, anyway. And he tried to make me believe that it was okay. Normal. That you, if you did it, wanted to, I mean, then, you know, what could be wrong with that?"
Her voice breaks up as she tries not to cry.
"The sickest part is that I actually believed him. About you. I believed every word, until the other day."
"I never knew any of that, Amanda. I swear.
I hated you. So much as I should have hated him. I hated you instead. I don't know why. It's all fucked up, isn't it?"
She laughs, even as she cries.
"Yeah, it's all fucked up," I agree. "But I think it's going to get better now."
"It has to," she says. "It will." As I walk the two blocks up the street, the air feels different. My steps against the ground feel different. The world, everything feels different. I push through the heavy wooden door at the bar and I'm strangled by smells of beer and smoke. I spot Kaylin right away down at the end of the bar, looking pathetic and crumpled, his hand curled loosely around a shot glass.
"Hey, hey, hey, you, girl,"
the bartender yells at me.
"ID."
"No, I'm just here for my brother. Over there," I yell to him, pointing at Kaylin. The bartender walks down the length of the bar and raps his knuckles twice on the shiny wooden counter in front of Kaylin. He raises his head slowly.
"Time to go, buddy,"
he tells him, nodding his head in my direction. Kaylin turns toward me, wobbling a little as he stands, moving slowly as he reaches for his wallet.
"Edie, I said I would pick you up,"
he says while ushering me out the door. It wasn't that far. I felt like walking anyway.
"I don't like you in there,"
he mumbles. We walk in silence to the parking garage. "I should probably drive, huh?" I ask, watching him sway back and forth.
"Here,"
he says, tossing his car keys to me. After I adjust the seat and mirror, I decide to light a cigarette. No more secrets. He looks at me like he's about to chide me, his kid sister, but then he looks forward and says,
"Can I bum one?"
I feel myself grin as I hand him mine and light up another. He tries to smile at me. We drive home, finishing our cigarettes in silence. I park the car in the street.
"Edie, wait,"
he says as I start to get out.
"Yeah?"
Uncomfortable, he does one of his half-shrug, head-shake gestures and opens his mouth, taking a few extra seconds for the words to come.
"I don't know. I'm sorry. I'm so sorry, Edie."
He looks me in the eye.
"I'm your brother, and I love you. That's all. I don't know what else to say."
I think that's all I ever wanted to hear from him. "You'll stay with me when I tell Mom and Dad?" He nods.
"Yeah."
He holds my hand as we walk up the driveway. It feels like it's a million miles away. Like it's taken a million years to finally get here. But it gives me a chance to think. And I think, maybe I'll explain this to some people. Maybe Mara. Maybe I'll apologize to some people. Maybe Steve. Maybe I'll try a real relationship someday. One without all the lies and games. Maybe I'll go to college even. And maybe I'll figure out that I'm actually good at something. Maybe he'll get what he deserves. Maybe not. Maybe I'll never find it in my heart to forgive him. And maybe there's nothing wrong with that either. All these maybes swimming around my head make me think that maybe could just be another word for hope. Though this book is a work of fiction, I recognize the millions of real-life teens who have, in some way, shared Eden's experience. Unfortunately, theirs are not new stories, but they are ones that need desperately to be told, over and over and over. If you need to speak with someone, there are people who will listen. There are people who will help. For free, confidential, secure support, visit the Rape, Abuse, and Incest National Network at rainn.org or call the RAIN hotline, 1-800-656-HOPE.
The Way I Used to Be was written by Amber Smith and read by Rebecca Ross. Editing and post-production by Common Mode. Paul Fowley, technical director. The associate producer was Louisa Solomon. The mix engineer was Ashley Lehman. This has been a presentation of Simon & Schuster Audio. The Way I Used to Be is available in print from Margaret K. McElderry Books.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.